You are listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
Chapter 20. At the height of the thunder and lightning storm, Jilin had fought desperately to maintain contact with the lead Eilon, but found it increasingly difficult. Through the frightful conditions, he continually urged Luana forward with Curlay's words. "Onward! We must stay with the others! On, Luana! Your name is timeless fortitude in the old tongue. You are the strong one, the courageous one!" Drenched and exhausted, he saw Spekeren taking the lead and remained in formation through their descent, the flight above marshland, and the climb with the magician in front. Then, going in and out of fog, and stroking Luana and imploring her onward, he suddenly realized he could no longer see the others. Searching frantically in every direction, through rain and murky atmosphere, he saw no one. Did they pull ahead or turn? He had no idea, and slowed his Eilon to consider what to do. Alone, and after moments of indecision, he decided he must land. Eventually spotting a grassy area with leafy coverage above, he made his approach and touched down on moist grass. "The others must be nearby," he told Luana. "For now we will stay here. We have no choice. They'll soon notice we're missing." To his surprise, within moments another raven, Kirin aboard, flapped down through the wind and rain and alighted a short distance away. To the lad's amazement, a soaked Rugum Chamter slid down off the bird.
"Jilin, are you there?" called the bearded elder. "Are you there with Luana?"
"Yes. What are you doing here? How in the world did you find me?" Rugum began moving through wet grass toward Luana, staring about as he came.
"Let me touch you, lad."
"I'm here," said the youth. Approaching the overseer, he reached out and grasped Rugum's saturated shoulder. The startled elder drew back, then placed his hand on Jilin's.
"I'm so glad to have found you," said Rugum.
"What are you doing here?" Jilin was bewildered, yet relieved by the overseer's astounding arrival.
"We haven't much time if we want to find the others."
"The others?" Jilin eyed the elder. "You've been following us."
"It's a long story. We haven't time right now."
Rugum looked up at dark, low-hanging clouds moving rapidly to the east, and sheets of rain showing no sign of abatement.
"We can't look for the others now. Let's find shelter where we can talk."
They released their Eilon to hunt for food in the dank surrounding woods. Then, gripping the invisible lad by the wrist, Rugum led him deeper into the forest, where they found a small patch of ground covered by thick overhanging foliage, and sat down upon damp rocks.
"I don't like it one bit," said the overseer, "but we must wait to search for the others. Jilin, the five of you were flying together a short while ago. When the others veered to the right, you went straight ahead. Didn't you see them turn?"
"I lost sight of them, all of them."
The elder shook his head.
"It's unfortunate, very unfortunate. And yes, I was following you, have been since the beginning, since you left the Mulgar Tree 3 days ago. But I've done it well, skillfully and secretly. I kept just enough distance that you'd be highly unlikely to detect me, but I was there. I kept you in constant view. Today I had to come much closer than the past 2 days, and you've all been so busy you never detected me. I'm very glad you followed, for whatever reason, or Luana and I would be alone." "I saw you continue on your own. I assumed you missed a signal and decided to follow you instead of the others."
"Sir, if I might ask, why were you following us?" The overseer gazed silently at the ground.
"I made that decision after the vote at the gathering. I wanted to be part of the expedition. I respect the clan and hold nothing against them for the results of the voting, nor against Deliani for being in the party, but I wouldn't be prohibited from participating. This quest will be vital, and more experience will be needed than exists in the chosen group. I intended to reveal myself when the time was right, hoping to be included in the party.
I didn't expect the occasion to arise this early. I had planned that it be farther from home, so it would be harder to turn me away. Ruggum chuckled. Once I almost lost you. The first night, the group broke up and slept in several trees. To stay undetected, I decided to sleep a little ways away. But because of it, when morning came, I missed your departure. I found breakfast, then looked for you, and you were gone. I left quickly, followed an easterly course, and thankfully was able to catch up with you. I decided that would never happen again. Last night, when you were all in one tree, I settled in its uppermost branches with Alsanam, and we were there all night. When the mist and rain came, I was glad we were nearby, or you might have gotten away again. I am most grateful you followed me today, but what do we do now? How do we find the others? Rising to his feet, Ruggum poked his head outside the shelter, raindrops spattering his face and moistening his beard. Seeing no break in the storm, his eyes darkened, and he frowned as he turned back to Jilin. We must simply wait. Let us make ourselves as comfortable as possible. When the weather changes for the better, we will venture out. His deep concern, however, which he did not share with Jilin, was that, rain or shine, they would never find the others again. Chapter 21. With no instruments of magic at their disposal, Ruggum and Jilin used the age-old implements of flint and steel from the Overseer's pack to start their fire. Though smaller than that of Spekeren's party, it was enough to warm them through the rest of the day and the night and dry their clothing. When they awoke the next morning, the weather had cleared. They extinguished the fire and prepared for departure. Their plan was to return to the site where Ruggum had observed Jilin separate from the others, a moderate flight to the west. Upward they flew, and after yesterday's stormy conditions, they were taking pleasure in the early morning sunshine when Jilin caught sight of two flying creatures hurtling in their direction. He recognized their featureless faces immediately and, filled with terror, plunged his eidolon downward. Seeing them also, Ruggum followed him closely. To their amazement, the creatures didn't give chase, flying by at breakneck speed. Hovering above the treetops, the Kirins watched the ghastly things until they were out of sight. The Kirins landed and dismounted, but it took some time for Jilin to recover his composure. When he spoke, his voice quivered. They were Volodons. Olaman had never seen one, but described them in what detail he could. He paused. I still have Olaman's knowledge, and they didn't pursue me. And they both suspected why. Having already been attacked and rendered invisible, Jilin was no longer a target for the creatures. Then the clans might not be in jeopardy with Raedel in their midst, said Ruggum. And Tali might be the only one still in danger, said the lad, deeply disturbed. They could have been pursuing her just now. It was only speculation that Jilin was no longer a target for the creatures, and Ruggum was far from convinced it was true. He waited a lengthy time and searched the skies long and hard before recommending a second departure. It was almost midday when they did lift off, and it was with caution, but they ascended and headed west. With no further sightings of the monsters, they began searching the terrain below. After a while, Ruggum spoke.
I believe this is where they left you and went that way, he said, pointing south.
Gazing in that direction, they spied a grouping of trees some distance away. Near it was an open area, then forest and marshland. Guessing the party might have landed there for a respite from the storm, Ruggum flew toward it, Jilin following. Nearing the grove of trees, they saw something they had hoped for, evidence someone had recently been there, remnants of a fire. They descended swiftly, touching down next to the charred wooden ashes, and immediately saw Spekeren's sign. Dismounting, they approached the Ruvan figures, Ruggum recognizing them as the work of his old friend. As they deciphered the meaning, their fears were partially allayed. Jilin touched the elder's foot with his own, but couldn't stop thinking about Tali.
"We must simply wait," said Ruggum. "They're searching for you. They'll be back."
He patted his stomach.
"In the meantime, do you realize something? We haven't eaten, neither last night nor this morning. Let's see what we can find for lunch."
Jilin wasn't hungry, but ate what he could, and they rested in the sun the remainder of the afternoon, relieved to be in the place their friends had been, and near Speckerin's message. As they waited, though neither voiced it, they shared a deep concern. The Volodons they saw were seeking Tali. In the late afternoon, they hoped to see their companions returning from an all-day search for Jilin. They glanced frequently at the skies and toward the horizon in every direction. Jilin mounted Loana and flew up to look around, longing to see them, and if he did, he'd surprise them by flying to meet them. But he saw nothing and descended again to the ground. With darkness falling, Ruggum reignited the fire, both to help the others find their camp and for warmth against the cooling air. The evening went slowly, and the two waited, stoking the fire, rationalizing the party's tardiness, and hoping against hope they were unharmed. The moon rose, and the sky was filled with stars. Before lying down, Jilin removed the calamar from his belt satchel and handed it to Ruggum.
"Olaman gave it to me," said the lad. "Only I can use it. During our trek, I have used it constantly to determine our bearing, and I used it when Hutt and I escaped the Granum. Aside from that, in my possession, it has been active two other times, when Tali found me through her toe ring, and when Hutt saw his mother making breakfast."
Ruggum turned the object over in his hands. Untrained in this sort of magic, he could make nothing of it.
"I hope Tali uses the ring again," said Jilin.
It was the first time either had hinted the others might not return tonight. He took the calamar from Ruggum.
"I wish I knew how to find Tali and the others with this."
The calamar in one hand and Tali's golden disc in the other, he fell asleep by the fire. Eventually Ruggum did also, but he was startled awake by an owl hooting nearby and had trouble getting back to sleep. The owl reminded him of one living near Rogallanon. Drifting off, he envisioned a merry clan gathering with Speckerin and all their friends, and the peaceful life they lived before all the trouble began. They awoke to another clear morning, but their friends had not returned. They began a second day of waiting, quietly and in contemplation. But by mid-afternoon, Ruggum was agitated and wondered aloud whether they should start looking for the others. Deciding it was too late in the day, they simply waited and toward dark rekindled the fire. Jilin reclined by the flames, the overseer resting under a nearby tree, and they passed another restless night. A cloud cover moved across the sky before dawn. When they awoke, with still no sign of the party, almost all hope of a reunion at this site was gone. Ruggum voiced a severe question, one on both their minds as the waiting became longer and more intolerable.
"We have a serious decision to make. Besides continuing to wait, there are three alternatives. We can return to the clans, search for the others, or carry on the quest alone." He paused. "You have Olaman's knowledge and the Calamar, and can lead us to our destination. You also wear the pall of invisibility. It might be that our only hope of changing that is to go on. What do you want to do?"
Fingering Tali's disc, Jilin was silent only briefly. Deploring the idea of leaving her behind, he knew they had but one choice.
"The two of us can make it. I have the knowledge, you have experience. And perhaps we'll find the others along the way."
"Brave lad," said the elder, "so be it. We must collect food and prepare for departure. I'll leave a message for Speckerin. If they return, they'll know we've gone on, and they'll be very surprised who's with you."
The overseer created his Ruvan message near the fire. Then he stood silently staring down at the one the magician had made.
"Goodbye, old friend," he said. He turned and boarded Alsanam, and they departed. They headed eastward under a sunless sky. The flight was without incident, and they had time to think about their friends. Some of it they discussed, some they kept to themselves. During the 2 days of waiting, they had come to a realization. Something must have befallen their companions, or they would have returned. At times, as Jilin and Rugum flew, they mourned their lost compatriots. In better moments, they expected to come across them at any time. In any case, they had a mission to fulfill, they reassured each other, and they were on their way to accomplishing it. They traveled uneventfully for 2 days, sleeping overnight in trees. Late in the afternoon of the third day, while looking for a place to spend the night, they spied a peaceful pond. It was bordered on one side by tall, shining spruce trees, and the other by waves of reeds and swamp grass. They descended, landing among the evergreens, and dismounted. The Eilon were departing to search for food when a rustling came from nearby. Coming through the trees were two human beings, an adult male in the lead and a small female following. The man carried a long pole and a box, and they were heading toward the pond. The Kirins froze in their tracks. They had long been taught that if they encountered humans, they should become still, and the giant beings would take no notice of them. Going by a short distance away, the man paid no attention to the ravens, intent upon his destination. But the girl, half his height, glanced in their direction and stopped. She stared for a few moments at the two great birds and moved a little closer. "Don't dally," called the man, continuing toward the water. "We've got fishing to do." Then the little girl's gaze appeared to leave the Eilon and fall upon the Kirins, and she came even closer. Paying no attention to Rugum, she looked straight at Jilin and said, "Hello." Chapter 22.
"We must find the campsite," said Spekeren. "Jilin might be waiting there now."
They were high in flight, and below was a vast landscape of greens, browns, and blues. Above was a vacant azure sky. So intent had they been on evading the Volodans, no one could recall the direction in which they fled, even in relation to the sun. There were no familiar landmarks in the terrain below.
"My Kalamar might help us locate the camp," thought the old magician, "but I have no idea how to use it for that, and am not eager to try after what happened last time."
The Eilon were flagging after the punishing chase and would soon have to land. The Kirin's only hope now was to happen upon the campsite or Loana.
"We might have been driven southward," said Spekeren, thinking perhaps he recognized a strip of land to the north. "Maybe we should start northward."
No one argued. No one knew what to do. But they turned in the direction he suggested and gradually glided downward. Landing in a wooded area near a brook, they released the spent ravens. The Kirins wished they could allow their Eilon to rest the remainder of the day, but further effort would be required from each party member, including the birds, every moment counting in the search for Jilin. After a brief stop, they lifted off, proceeding northward. For the entire day, and until dusk, they flew slowly, scrutinizing the terrain to right and left, observing bushes, trees, and open areas for any sign of Loana, and calling Jilin's name. The ravens cawed periodically for their lost companion, but their masters saw nothing familiar and no trace of the missing pair. Nor did they relocate the campsite. Finally, they halted and found tree holes to sleep in. Exhausted and disappointed, all but Tali rested. She spent much of the night trying to communicate with Jilin, holding the toe ring at arm's length, viewing the moon through it,
trying to duplicate what she did when she saw Jilin through it. She thought long and hard about her beloved companion, their times together at home, where he might be now, and everything else she could think of relating to him. To her dismay, nothing happened. No tugging or pulling of the ring, nothing appearing within its confines, and it didn't glow. Drained, dejected, and afraid she would never see him again, she fell into a fitful slumber. The morning was clear. At breakfast, Speckerin voiced what all were thinking. "We have taken a wrong course. If it were correct, we should have found the camp by now. We must search again today, but if we haven't found Jilin by evening, our chances of doing so will be small. Now, together, we must decide in which direction to go." Everyone but Tali expressed an opinion. After a nearly sleepless night, she didn't want to risk a wrong guess regarding the search for her lost friend. The direction that seemed most practical, because it was the direction in which they must go eventually, was to the east, and they started off. Flying slowly all day, examining the landscape under a bright and sunny sky, they again came across no sign of Jilin. They stopped to rest overnight, and awoke the next morning to a sky ominous, dark, and overcast. Gathering the others around him, Speckerin was grave as he spoke. "We cannot continue to retrace our steps or progress slowly. We have not found Jilin. He is a resourceful youth skilled in woodsmanship. He has a strong Eilon in Loana, and he has his Calamar. He's undoubtedly all right. And since he was only a few days from home when we lost him, he might already be on his way there. It is my guess and my hope he is." He turned to Tali. "We don't have Jilin's Calamar to set an exact bearing, but we know the general direction. Be very careful how you answer this. Have you the knowledge, or anything else for that matter, to guide us from here?" The disturbed lass was painfully aware that the burden of responsibility was hers alone. "I believe so." "Are you certain enough," asked Deliani, "for us to continue onward?" Tali was pale and silent. Then she answered in a subdued voice, "Yes." The old magician stared at her. "So be it," he said, a knot in his stomach. "We, the surviving party, must carry on, without Jilin." They all knew this was coming and what it meant to Tali. They hung their heads, but no one dissented. They departed and set an easterly course. Little was said as they traveled. Resigned, they would not be reunited with Jilin during this journey. All, including Speckerin, wondered what his fate had been. They could only trust he was safe and hopefully on his way home. That night, trying to rest, Hutt wished he was on his way home, too, with his cousin, but he knew the mission must go on, and he finally fell asleep. The small party made its way eastward for 4 more days, traveling during the day and stopping at night. Some territory they passed over was inhabited by humans, but nothing troublesome occurred. Tali became increasingly distracted, and for several reasons, not all known to the others, but all relating to Jilin. Aside from their affection for each other, they were the only Mogers on the quest, and the only ones with the knowledge. Tali now bore that burden alone. The Volodon attack had underscored that convincingly and shook her to the core. At night, her sleep was disturbed by repeated efforts at communication with her lost friend through the ring, and by another factor. Deeply troubling her was a matter she wouldn't discuss with the others. Oloman's Calamar was to direct them over land and across a giant body of water to their final destination. "How do we find it now," she wondered, "without his Calamar?" Indeed, she had told Deliani and Speckerin she was capable of directing them. But that answer was influenced by her desire to complete the mission for Oloman, herself, and Jilin. Deep down inside, she wondered whether her knowledge and the ring were enough. Her only hope was to discover a way to use the ring to lead them. If she couldn't, the mission was doomed. At night, In addition to trying to contact Jilin, she was attempting to become more proficient with the ring, and not succeeding. The others recognized her distraction, and it worried them deeply, yet they were powerless to help. She had long since been displaced from leadership by Spekeren and flew in Jilin's old place, behind the magician and in front of Deliani, so someone could watch over her. During the fifth day of travel without Jilin, 6 days after leaving the camp, something happened that would alter the mission completely. The day was hot and muggy, typical of late spring. Fatigued and distraught, Tali rode astride Farallon in the hazy midday sun. As the warm afternoon wore on, she tried to concentrate on flight, but her eyes began to blur and her head to swim. Feeling the grip of her feet about the bird's neck slacken, she couldn't seem to do anything to stop it. Tilting toward one side, she all at once was loose, tumbling earthward turn after turn, and the ground was approaching rapidly.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
To learn more about Kirin's, visit www.kirinbooks.com.
You have been listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.